Stay relevant and up to date. Informed. This is 101.9 High FM.
You're listening to 101.9 High FM or highfm.com. I'm Benji Shulman and this is the New Blue Review. Welcome to the program, the radio and podcast show that brings you the latest and greatest in Jewish politics, current affairs, and debate. And if you're going to be having a future for politics, current affairs, and debate, you really need to be dealing with the question of Jewish education. How are we educating our students? How are we educating our kids? And how are we making it cheaper and accessible for people who may want to educate Jewishly when it comes to their kids or even their adults, but can't quite afford it? Obviously, technology being one of the solutions that is being bandied about. Lots and lots of calls for extra STEM subjects in Jewish schools around the world. That's being science, technology, economics. Thank you. There we go. My guest is getting there for me. Economics and maths. Can't make a mistake like that. Hey? It's terrible. We're going to be talking about all of that and how is it that we can secure a Jewish future from Talmud to tech in the education field. The person that we're going to be speaking to today is Corinne Awesome-Driver. She is from Jewish Interactive. She's the COO. And we're going to be looking at one route that people have been taking in terms of Jewish education, that particularly being the app route and the technology route, and looking at this issue of Jewish education. Corinne, thank you so much for being on the program today and welcome to the New Blue Review.
Thank you for having me, Benji.
So, first off, let's start off by talking, what is Jewish Interactive? How did it come about?
So, Jewish Interactive is a non-profit organization that was set up to meet exactly that need, to educate Jewish children using technology, and to try and bring Jewish studies into the 21st century. So we've been going since we started developing our first app in 2010. And after the success of that app, which was Jewish Interactive, we established our first app was Shabbat Interactive, and as a result of that, we established Jewish Interactive. And the idea was that children are using their iPads anyway, using all these apps, and let them experiment and play with Jewish content. And that's what we do.
That's really, really interesting. Now, one of the things I want to talk to you about is, first of all, when you're talking about bringing Jewish education into the 21st century, I think most people perhaps have an interesting relationship with their Jewish education upbringing, whether it's in a Jewish school or perhaps they were part of a Cheder movement or at home. And there are some sort of tried and tested methods. Normally it's an old person, often a man, writing stuff on a blackboard, Talmud studies, lots of old pedagogies when it comes to education. Are you just taking those and making them techie, or is there a new approach that we're seeing to Jewish education?
We're trying to combine, and we're trying to include the teacher. We're not getting rid of the teacher at all. We're trying to provide the tools for the teacher to, you know, the children are learning geography. They've got Google Maps and all these exciting interactive apps. They come to Jewish studies, and they're getting these old Ronio sheets from 1940 that have been used through the generations, and they don't relate to it. So we are trying to combine what's available in technology, like our latest app, which is JR Tap, has access to the full text of the Sefaria. So like a child can go and look up any pasuk in the Tanakh, in the Midrash, in the Gemara, and bring that in and work with that text in Hebrew and English. So we are making the classic text more accessible to children, and hopefully they'll interact with them in a fun way.
So do you require a teacher for all your apps? I mean, is there anything that's on the apps that is self-learning and allows kids to simply sort of explore themselves?
So when I wrote the apps, that's what I had in mind, that a child could work with them by themselves. Shabbat Interactive is led by candlestick avatars, and like the child can go and learn happily by themselves.
Kind of a Beauty and the Beast kind of thing. Well, candlestick avatar.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Shamor and Zachor, but
right.
We definitely, the interaction with the teacher or with the parents, we found a lot of parents doing Shabbat Interactive with their children at home and enriching the family and learning in a non-threatening way themselves.
So it is possible, but you found that the most effective apps that you produced have actually been led by some adult in the room, not just letting the kids poke around on the
definitely,
iPad.
Definitely. Most of our tool apps like JR Studio and JR Tap are designed for enriching the classroom. So if a teacher is innovative and can assign fun tasks, the learning is fun, even though the child can do it by themselves. Certainly a teacher-led, there's much more interaction and learning and deeper learning.
Yeah, certainly that is, I suppose, what you want, right? Deeper learning when it comes to Jewish studies. Talk to us a little bit about the applications themselves. You spoke about the Shabbat. I mean, what does a Shabbat app look like, and what other kinds of stuff are you producing at the moment?
So Shabbat Interactive was our first app, it's a learning environment of 9 different modules of every aspect of Shabbat, from the historical side, the first Shabbat, which is creation, the giving of the Ten Commandments, and then the Melachot, and then Shabbat every week. So it's very what I try to do is teach what you do on Shabbat, not what you don't do. Like really going for the positive and trying to show the kids the beauty of Shabbat. They don't do it on Shabbat. In fact, the one module for Shabbat day is they prepare a game during the week that they can print out and play on Shabbat. And it's like a summary of everything they've learned. So that was our first module. That was only available on a computer and in a classroom on the whiteboard. It was before iPads. So it's our only app that hasn't been released on as an iPad. Since then, we've developed tools for the classroom, a whole set of Jewish clip art, which the teachers asked for, which has evolved into... like now with JR Tap, they take the clip art and can make whole interactions. And
we were talking about Jewish clip art. What does that mean? Is it like pharaohs that you can stick in?
Absolutely.
And bits of matzahs?
All the plagues.
Right.
yes. It's taking all the parashiot and all the holidays and giving the graphics and the words and the backgrounds that kids would need. And then the ability to insert the text from the Tanakh to, so for example, we've just had Pesach, and so the kids can do their own Haggadah using all our graphics and bringing in sounds. We've recorded all the songs, so they actually did make their own Haggadah with their own singing or with the songs that we supply.
And have you covered all the holidays, or is it only Pesach and Shabbat so far?
No, we've got a wonderful app for young children called Ma Menorah. Mm-hmm. It's aimed at children aged 3 to 5. And we have children who are addicted and are singing Hanukkah songs even now during Pesach. So Ma Menorah is for Hanukkah. And then we also have the Sukkah Challenge. We've got an amazing app. It's huge. It deals with all the halachot with building your own sukkah, but the children go and earn money by learning the halachot, and then they go to the shuk and buy their supplies and build their own sukkah in a 3D environment.
Wow, that's so incredible. The age group that you're targeting here with this sort of thing, I mean, is there a age that you found is most affected by this kind of technological interaction in terms of what they like to see and what they like to engage with?
Well, we've got two distinct age groups. We've developed for age 3 to 5, which is very basic. Like with Ma Menorah, we're teaching, like they spin the dreidel to get the colors, and then they learn the colors in English and Hebrew and counting. And then we've got Make It Grow, which is an app for Tu Bishvat, where they plant their own trees and make them grow. But then we also have the age group from 6 to 11, which I think is a very important age group, because they're already at in school, and we're trying to catch them when they're young so that they aren't put off being Jewish and are enjoying learning about being Jewish. Without even knowing that they're learning, hopefully.
which is, I suppose, the idea when it comes to when it comes to this sort of thing. So, one of the things I imagine must be quite interesting is perhaps you can get feedback from the apps themselves to see what the kids are doing that's more effective, as opposed to, you know, if in the old days you give kid a worksheet, you don't know what the kid is actually engaging with. So are you able to track what they like and what they enjoy and use the apps from there?
Yes. So in JRTAP, there's a full tracking system. The insights, teachers can actually create their own games and then track screen by screen what each child, they create their own classes and they can see screen by screen what the kids have done and where they've had difficulty. With JR Studio, which is also a tool that where they can make their own creations, we can track which skim they use the most, which graphics they use the most. And it's really interesting to watch the fluctuations over Pesach, this Pasuk, you know, like this. And as the year goes by, you see the fluctuations and you see which collections the children are using.
And have you been able to use that to integrate into the, you know, into the rest of other sorts of apps that you're doing, or give feedback to the teachers about what is useful when it comes to actually teaching on the app themselves?
Yes. So we based on that, we've created booklets that people can download from our website about lesson plans and what we suggest the teachers do in the classes. Yeah. Definitely.
The other thing I wanted to talk about is the application of this. So we've got these apps, we've got, you know, what they're doing and the kids involved. How does it fit then into the school environment? Are you engaging the teachers? Are you reaching out to principals? Are you finding teachers who are just downloading the apps themselves and kind of going from there? How does it work from screen into the classroom?
It's a very interesting question because it's also evolved as we've progressed. We up till now, we have found that teachers have found us by mistake, found our website looking for interactive Jewish material and found Jewish Interactive and downloaded our apps. All our apps are available on our website for the PC, Mac downloads. And so they find our material and start using it. And we are actually in 42 different countries because of that. And it's really amazing how some of our apps, like JR Studio, which is the clip art, are being used in South America very extensively, in Argentina and Brazil, because they are, and Mexico, because they're beyond language. And it's really interesting to see what the children are actually coming up with. Now we have an app called this JRTAP, where we've teamed up with TinyTAP, which is an Israeli-based company that have made this interactive environment for teaching any subject, any language. And we've teamed up with them and created JRTAP, which is a Jewish marketplace. And so we are now having a school subscription. We are approaching schools, and we're already in quite a few throughout England and the States and Australia as well. And there's a school subscription where the every child has an account and they are part of a group and the teacher can create their own lessons and assign them.
I mean, it's an interesting question, technology in schools itself. First of all, from a funding perspective, I mean, Jewish schools are notoriously expensive already. People are saying that they're not being properly technologically equipped. Concerns in Israel, for example, around STEM teaching, kids not getting proper maths, not proper technology in other schools around the world. Yeah. Are schools able to have the bandwidth to now incorporate technology on top of all the other issues that they have to face when educating the kids?
What we're finding that most schools have a computer lab, so our apps are available on computer. Most schools also have a trolley of iPads. And again, we've had to evolve because until recently, we just said, okay, the child's working on an iPad and on the internet, and tomorrow they'll use a different iPad. And we've had a very strong request from the market for the children's work to be stored on the cloud so that tomorrow they can pick up a different iPad and carry on with their work. So we've just started a login where slowly our apps will be adapted so that they can be stored on the cloud and any child can go home and on their Mac and just log in and carry on with their creation, what they were doing in the morning at school. But the schools, a lot of schools have problems, even the most advanced schools that we've worked with have problems with bandwidth, with internet connectivity. We've been to some of the best schools in America, and we go there to demo, and oops, we can't get a connection. So there are ups and downs. Very unpredictable, but schools are definitely trying and seeing the advantages of bringing technology.
You're listening to 101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is the New Blue Review. If you're listening to us on Chai FM, welcome to the program. Or indeed, if you are on J Post, also good to be with you. And we're speaking to Corinne Austin-Driver. She's from Jewish Interactive, and we're talking about Jewish education in the 21st century. What does it mean, and what does it look like?
Stay relevant and up to date. Keep informed. This is 101.9 High FM.
So, Corinne, obviously, we've spoken about the technological aspects, and that's one of the things you're speaking about the unpredictability. What about the cost side of things? I mean, how does a school go about getting a subscription? Do you find that they have to get additional sponsors? How do you guys, as the app developers, I mean, you're a non-profit, so how do you get money to produce the apps in the first place?
Well, up till now, we've been mainly funded by Martin Glatt from the Glatt Foundation, and we have had other sponsorships, like from Foundation 2000, from the late Gerald Leisner. We've just finished a project now with SIJ, Center for Innovation in Jewish Education in the States, and we've done an app called JAR Calendar, which is a whole interactive cross, cross-platform, we bring in geometry, geography, everything, astronomy. Okay. So they've paid for that, but it's not really sustainable, and all our apps are downloaded for free, because the moment you start charging for them, schools, you know, can't find the 99 cents per app. So we're looking at other models now, and with JRTAP we do have a subscription model where a school will buy a subscription for the school for a year, and that allows up to 1,000 kids to have an account. There are different models for that as well. Sometimes the schools don't have that money either. So, for example, in Michigan, we've received funding for all the school, the Jewish schools in Michigan are being funded to use JRTAP. We're working closely with federations as well, and they are going to try and raise the money to support the schools so that they can get the content.
But over time, perhaps this could actually lead to less costs for Jewish schools, not necessarily more. It's an interesting question about how technology might be used to make Jewish education more affordable and more accessible. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, so many Jewish children in America don't receive any Jewish education just because of the costs, or else they go to Sunday schools and there's so little time to do anything there. So we're hoping that our apps are being used as a flipped classroom, that they're learning, they're playing the games and enjoying it, and then going into the classroom and already have got the basis, and then they have the discussion in class with the teachers. Or the cheder teachers, which is what's happening. We've got a lot of downloads from various synagogues throughout America, hundreds actually. And when I've contacted them to ask how they're using it, it's the Sunday school, and they've got 90 children or 100 children, and they are assigning homework through our apps, which is very exciting.
So it can also be used almost in a remote model to produce outcomes.
Yeah. And in Australia, I was there in July, and we spoke with the Sydney Board of Jewish Education, and they were saying how they have to reach, you know, the one Jewish child in the school in the middle of nowhere, and this is a way to also reach those children.
Absolutely incredible. Talk to us a little bit about the app itself. I mean, a development process for an app is famously long and difficult. And what is it like to produce a Jewish app? How many people are involved? Is it all done in one place? How does that work?
Okay, well, our team is spread out all over the world. It's a very interesting question because people think we have this huge team because we've done so many apps. We actually, I'm the instructional designer. We've got two graphic artists sitting here in Johannesburg with me. We've got one programmer who sits in Modi'in in Israel, and our CEO, Hannah Kansen, is sitting in London giving instructions. And then we do outsource for JR Calendar, it's all in 3D, so we had to outsource to a company in Israel, and they did the 3D animations and things like that for us. But it is a long process. So we're a very small team, and we work on Skype and Zoom daily with the rest of the world. But we seem to be efficient and get to do an app every 8 months, 9 months.
And what does the process look like? I mean, when you sit down with a funder or with someone who wants an app, or perhaps you have a new idea, what is the process of then kind of producing something
okay.
like this?
So, for example, the calendar, Saj commissioned us. We had actually been working on ideas for a calendar for a few years already, and that involves we work with a rabbi, with Rabbi Johnny Solomon in Israel. And so Johnny and I were sitting and the team thinking of interactions, how we're going to actually do all of this. And then I sit down and create it in PowerPoint interactively, and so we can actually run it before we've actually produced anything. And then from those PowerPoint scripts, the 3D graphics are created and made alive. And the programmer takes over and creates those worlds. And then with JR Calendar, we used voices from Disney. Saul Blinkhoff, who was in South Africa a few years ago for the Sinai and Daba, his children are actually our voices. So we record remotely in Hollywood. And then it's all brought together and debugged and tested. We do a lot of user testing. I go around to all the local schools all the time and test with the kids, because that's a really essential part, what the children want.
Fisher-Price, right? They were always famous for having this very intensive kid-tested model for their toys. So I'm interested, how does that work when you go around to a kid? Or what kind of feedback does a child give you? Do they say to you, it's freezing? Or do they say, I don't like something? How does it work to actually test a software as opposed to a hardware toy?
You find children of the appropriate age, and you give them the prototypes, even the PowerPoint. You can get so much feedback, whether they know what that button means. If they don't know what to do, then we know there's something wrong. If what happened with my menorah, we were at King David at the nursery school. They wouldn't leave. The one had my phone, the one had my iPad, and they were fighting over it, and I knew we had a hit. And they were able to do it. And then we took it to the grade ones and twos, and we'd thought that it was for much younger children. And to my amazement, the grade twos didn't want to let me go either. So you can really gauge. For JR Calendar, we went to Yeshiva College, and also I was worried that what we were doing wouldn't appeal to girls. And I had these girls also wouldn't let us go. So it is interesting. If they don't like it, they will tell you. But usually it's from observing and seeing how they manage with it. For example, my chief tester is my niece. She's 6 years old now, but with my menorah, she was my chief tester right from the time of the PowerPoint. And I remember her saying, but my fingers are too big and the candles are too small. This was a three-year-old telling me. And you know what? She was right. And we made the candles bigger and easier to drag. And it did improve the program a lot. The usability. We also work with Beit Izzy Shapiro in Ranana, who are world experts on trying to bring inclusiveness so that children are able, even if they are disabled, are able to use our products.
And so how does that sort of thing work in terms of?
So what we've done is they've recommended different things, like for my menorah, you drag the candle. So they said that their kids had difficulty dragging the candle. So like we're now aware of that and trying to do things that like you have the dragging but also tapping, you know, both are acceptable. They what they were saying was they use a lot of our programs. And in fact, they've made a whole series for challenge children on JR Tap. We've got a whole section for children who with special needs. And they were saying that for the first time, children who used to sit in their wheelchairs and just look at the wall at break because they couldn't do anything, now are fully engaged. They have their iPad and are playing like any other child, which I found amazing.
Yeah, that's incredible, actually. What about teachers themselves? Do they also give feedback in terms of, you know, how it's being used in the classroom that you can then incorporate into the product?
Very much so. When I see that there have been a lot of downloads, I contact the teachers, and it's very interesting working with them and hearing how they are using it. When they say that, you know, something's wrong, we do go and correct it. A Jazz Studio was, over about 3 years, we were just listening to teachers and children. We had a whole class in Jacksonville, Florida, from Martin Gottlieb School, who loved Jazz Studio, but they didn't like a few things about it. And I had a session with me and the programmer in Modi'in talking to these kids, and they had each one came up to the screen on Skype and told me what was wrong. And some of their ideas we incorporated, and they love it, and they do amazing work, and especially they feel that they're part of it, you know.
Now, I'm quite interested from, you know, the older sort of app perspective. I mean, you've spoken to us a little bit about Shabbat and a little bit about the menorah app and even the Pesach one with the clip art and the pharaohs and all that sort of thing. And I guess I can see in my mind how that would work for younger kids, right? If you're moving candles or if you're, you know, trying to do the different things for Shabbat. The calendar app that you're talking about sounds far more sophisticated. It sounds like, particularly because teaching Jewish time concepts is not so simple. There's lunar things and solar things. How do you, first of all, capture all of that? And second of all, then make that interactive so that it's easy to teach.
So the calendar app has been a nightmare just in terms of the calendar. And like, just as an example, we had to make two types of wheels, one with 12 months, one with 13 months, because 7 out of 19 years is a leap year. So we've actually hooked into a database of that's been built, you know, free domain. And hooked into that for the actual calendar part. But what I really wanted was for the children to actually try and understand why the moon changes and how that is related to the Jewish calendar. So we've got simulations, or we call them, you know, like the experience. So you've got the avatar looking through the window and seeing what the moon looks like, but on the other side, the child is actually moving the moon around the earth and seeing where it is in relation to the sun to make Rosh Chodesh. And those are, so it's actually quite complicated. And we give them all these different tasks to make Rosh Chodesh. What will the moon look like on the first night of Pesach? So then they've got to think. This is for 11-year-olds, 10-year-olds. They've got to think, okay, when is Pesach? What date of the month is it? And what will the moon look like? So we've got that. We've got the Jewish day. So also as they're moving as they're rotating the earth, they're seeing what the moon, what through the window, what it looks like in Jerusalem, because of course the centrality of Israel in the Jewish calendar. And then for the seasons, they move the earth around earth around the sun, and the questions are, okay, which season will it be, where will the moon be when will the earth be when it's Pesach? And then they've got to know it's Chag HaAviv and all that. So it gets quite complicated. And then also we've incorporated, if you're in Israel, if you're not in Israel. And this whole app was built from feedback from teachers. When you ask how the teachers are using it, we had focus groups with teachers in South Africa, in England, in America, to ask how they teach the calendar. And it turns out that every morning they start off with what is today's date, what will the moon look like tonight, and then if it's Rosh Chodesh, then they go into the whole month. So we built it that as a tool for the classroom, but then there's a game component where the children can play. It's a runner game, and they go and collect various items based on whether they're in the week, month, year, So it's an extremely it was an extremely complicated app to produce, but it's, I think it's, it looks beautiful.
I'm sure it must.
And we've had a few thousand downloads already, which is really nice. And it's just been out about 6 weeks.
So this idea of games in the use of education, I mean, it's become quite a big thing, even for corporates and, you know, at places where you wouldn't expect games to be. It's actually, you know, be teaching and learning in organizations where perhaps you wouldn't expect a game, corporates. So how have you seen the games being used versus the more traditional part of the app, you know, where the teacher drives the thing?
With the calendar, we've got two very specific aspects of it. We've got the classroom tool. And then we've got the games for the kids. So they are very, very different. And because we've just introduced this whole cloud and logging in and everything, we were actually looking this morning, and we've already got scores of over 5,000, which means that these kids have sat for a long time collecting little things at 20 points each. So the added incentive of having the global login is that you can check how you are doing as opposed to everybody else all over the world. So there's an added incentive there.
You're listening to 101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is the New Blue Review, talking about Jewish education and what is the future, whether it's Talmud or tech, and what are we doing. We're speaking to Corinne Ossendriver. She's from Jewish Interactive, and basically talking about games, about apps, about computers, and about kids. And actually sounds like kids having fun learning Jewish education. What a revolutionary idea that is. So if you're listening to us on 101.9 Chai FM, chaifm.com, or in the Jerusalem Post, please stay with us.
Stay relevant and up to date. This is 101.9 Chai FM.
Karine, I'm interested in this notion that you have of the global login, you know, the rise of social media, Facebook. It's become not so much about what you're learning right now, but also about, you know, how you are engaging with people, how you're looking at things. Do you think that there could come a time where we could have a global learning community of Jews, of kids using these sorts of apps, who are somehow cross-pollinating with one another, engaging with one another, so that a kid in Mexico is having a relationship with a kid in Israel or Australia or something?
Well, JRTAP is trying to become this. It's a marketplace, so that as teachers create their own games, they are, or children create their own games, they are put on the marketplace and are available. If they make them public, anyone can go in and use it and edit it themselves. We have a lot of problems with protecting the children and being COPPA compliant. So children themselves can't start a conversation because they're under 13. So we've had to inhibit children making comments on other people's games, but certainly adults can comment on other teachers' games and things like that, and communicate and follow. Like it's a Facebook for Jewish teachers.
What is COPPA compliant, for people who are not sure?
COPPA compliant means that it's protecting the rights of the children. So, for example, we can't have their full name. Certainly, we can't say where they give their address or phone number or anything like that. And also, because with our apps you can take photos, and they are protected. Like we do monitor what's put up,
So
the rights of the child.
Security aspect is actually very important when it comes to producing stuff like this.
Yes, and we take it very seriously. So, for example, with JR Calendar, you automatically get the GPS coordinates so that we can give you the time. When you go into today's date, we've got all this money, what time will be sunset, sunrise, midnight, whatever. But we can't do anything with that because the child, we can't store anything. We can't keep any information about a child that would pinpoint where they are. Mm-hmm. So we just have it for the closest city and information like that.
But the teachers themselves can engage. Are teachers able to create games? I mean,
yes.
These are people who are trained to teach kids in geography or math or science. Is it easy enough for an educator to then go and produce their own stuff?
It's amazing what they are producing. This Michigan school that all these schools there was a training in February, and one of the teachers after this one training has made this entire game of Ashrei. Like, she's made that you can click on every single word, hear it, sing the whole sentence, and collect awards along the way. She's made a whole game out of Ashrei. There's another one who's she's Detective Yonah, and is teaching like the Hebrew verbs and the Yonah letters. And it's got this whole mystery about Detective Yonah. She's found the shorish, she doesn't know what it is. And delightful stuff that teachers have made. And they really are getting into it. To make their own games, they can record their own voices and make their own animations, games, puzzles, things like that.
And so you're actually able to open up the creativity of the teachers as well as making learning fun for the kids.
And if the teachers don't want to make their own games, there's this whole marketplace that they can download and use.
And use. So approximately how many games are you now heading up to?
We have over 2,000 at the moment, and it's growing. It's growing daily.
2,000 games.
Over 2,000.
And of those, you guys have produced
about 40, 50 of them.
Oh wow! So it's really exponential growth in terms of games themselves.
We have a delightful example of a little boy, Yehuda, who was learning. He's a six-year-old in England, and he did a whole game about Hamishpacha Sheli. And he drew his whole family, and you had to click on his sister Rotem and on Yehuda, and learning about. It was obviously a lesson on the family. This is my mother. This is my father. And a delightful game where he recorded all the feedbacks and made a puzzle of his family. And it's really amazing to see what kids are coming up with and what teachers are coming up with.
Beyond the Jewish aspect, there's a lot of talk in just general circles when we're speaking about universities and university degrees. And a lot of people are saying, look, you know, the sort of traditional university degrees and stuff that we're doing are not always as helpful for the kids. At a vocational level, and that there needs to be more emphasis on coding, and that could be very much a career path for the future. What do you make of that idea that we should be also incorporating these sorts of coding and game creation at our kids at an early age?
I think learning coding can only help you because it teaches you logic. I'm by training a computer programmer. My degree's in computer science, so I can only advocate learning coding just because it teaches you that logic. And it goes, most of the careers that are going to be available for our kids in 10, 15 years' time don't exist today. Mm-hmm. You know, so we've got to give them the tools to think and to analyze and to. It's not memory anymore, because anything that you need is on your phone. You can access it. So it's a way of thinking and a way of giving you the discrimination, like being able to discriminate what is good and what is not. And I think that's where we've got to focus, is the analytics and coding and logic.
And are we doing a good enough job in our schools, do you think, of giving those basic skills, or is it still a little bit rote and a little bit... jam facts into kids' heads type thing.
I think it depends on the teacher. Again, like, you can have the most amazing teacher who sees it, like learning rote doesn't really help you anymore as much as it used to, and others who teach you how to think. I remember one conference I went to where they were talking about how you've got to give assignments that, like, children will go and use the internet, find the information, and then synthesize it into something meaningful. And that's the... And they gave the example of what was the menu on Van Riebeck's boat. So who was Van Riebeck? Like, where were they? What year were they? They had to go and do all that research. They had to learn about scurvy, about preservation, and come up with a menu.
Right.
That's thinking.
And what are those sorts of challenges that you're seeing? I mean, in the educational space, besides which I think – are important things that people are talking about, which is resources and teacher training. Where is the thinking around education going, like the next sort of big ideas that we're going to be seeing in the next few years?
Well, I hope more
more technology.
More technology and more interactive learning and more generating your own lessons and not depending on your Romeo sheets. We go to schools and teachers say, and how can I scan my sheets into JRTAP? And I say, why? We're giving you this amazing tool. So I think teacher training and opening up those horizons and I think a lot of teachers are scared of the technology. The children know so much more than the teachers in terms of technology. And I think once you overcome that hurdle of your fear, there's just so much you can do and make learning so much more meaningful, mindful and deep.
From a perspective of adults, are you seeing and a change, you know, teachers who maybe weren't using apps or maybe adults who weren't Jewishly engaged and now have to get their children engaged. Is that a process as well, that you're also relearning the adult generation?
We're trying to. There's certainly a hurdle and resistance, but I think the teachers that come to our trainings want to learn, you know, so they are prepared to take, you know, to tap where they've never tapped before. And it's wonderful to see these teachers become animated. Their faces change as they get excited, you know, about what they can do and so easily.
Now, one of the things I'd like to ask around the security aspect, I mean, you've spoken a bit about protecting kids and what you put in place, but that's, you know, obviously from the software perspective, there's a lot of questions at the moment about screen time with kids, you know, kids being locked into their iPad, not going outside. Where do you guys fall in terms of that debate about saying how that can be done in an appropriate manner?
Well, if they are being locked into their Jewish studies, then we don't have a problem with it.
More, it's fine.
But I agree that children must be must experience the outdoors and playing. And I think, I've seen so many interesting uses. We were at King David a couple of years ago and we had the iPads and they were using JR Studio to document creation. So the teacher encouraged them, go outside and take pictures of the trees. Go outside and do this. You know, so I think again, if we find ways to get them outside and use use the iPad in a clever way. Go and do your own research and document and bring it back and make a movie about it. Mm-hmm. You know, so that there is that balance.
Between both. So people who want to get hold of your products, who are interested in this kind of thing, what is the best way? Maybe there's a teacher out there or a kid maybe who wants to go, a parent even, who wants to get hold of it. What's the best way for them to get hold of your app?
Okay. Well, for PC or Mac, it's on jewishinteractive.org. Website on our products page. You can download from there for nothing, and then we also on the app store, Jewish Interactive. You can look up the names of the apps or the links on our website to all the iTunes addresses. We also, some of our apps are on Android as well, not all of them.
Okay, so it is more of an Apple thing at the moment.
Yes, yeah. JRTAP, you can only create lessons on an iPad, on the internet, with Apple, but we are working on an Android version because Chromebooks are being used. That's, again, we've heard from the teachers, they need it on Chromebooks, so we are listening to them and developing.
Well, there you go. If you are a Jewish educator or just want to learn a little bit more about Pesach or the calendar or any of these sorts of things, definitely go look at Jewish Interactive. Kareen, thank you so much for being with us here on the New Blue Review and help boldly going where Jewish education hasn't gone before.
Thank you very much for having me.
That brings us to the end of the show for today. Thank you so much for listening, either on Chai FM or if you're listening to us on the Jerusalem Post. We appreciate it. And as ever, if you have learned anything on the show or would like to make an app about what you'd like to hear for other guests on the program, we're always happy to take interesting comments and criticisms. You can email me. I'm benji@chai.co.za or get us on Twitter @ChaiFM. Or @Benji_Shulman, and we're happy to engage with you there. Great being with you, and we'll see you next time on the New Blue Review.